Well, Allison, it's an exciting day. We get to podcast about an Apple event that took place called Spring Forward, and I think we have a lot of interesting things to talk about.
I believe we do, and I must say I have a new spring in my step since this Apple event.
Well, all right then. Before we get into the specifics of the event, I want to just mention a couple tangentially kind of related things. One is that I'm really excited to see that Tim Cook has asked Lisa Jackson to head up Apple's accessibility efforts.
If she does half as good a job at accessibility as she's done with making the products more environmentally friendly, it could only mean good things for us. I saw some kind of negativity on Twitter that I didn't really understand why folks were kind of shooting her down before even giving her a chance. And I actually replied to somebody and I said, I'm gonna give her a chance before I say anything negative. And of course, there was no response. There was radio silence. So I'm thinking that, like I said, I think if she does, you know, half the job of accessibility that she did with the environment, we're going to be pretty good. And knowing how dedicated Apple executives are to the company, she's going to give the same 110% to accessibility that she gave to helping with improving the environmental friendliness of the products. So I'm excited to see what's coming next.
The second thing, I wanted to give another shout out to Rogue Amoeba for Audio Hijack, because I was able to, for the first time ever, record the audio from the live stream on Monday using Audio Hijack, and it just recorded it flawlessly. And Audio Hijack Pro wouldn't record that stream from Safari, but the new version will. So way to go, Grant and all the people at Rogue Amoeba. It's very cool to have these new capabilities.
Fantastic job, guys.
Yeah, the stream actually worked well on Monday. Apple hasn't always gotten their streaming to work as well, but it worked great for me.
It was perfect. I watched it on the iPhone, and it was flawless.
Let's dig in a little bit and try to highlight some of the important things that happened on Monday and give our take on some of them. The event began, of course, with a video about some of the new stores, Apple stores that are being opened in China, and Tim Cook talked a bit about how exciting it is for him that seems that China is really taking to Apple products in a big way, and that's nothing but good news for Apple and its sales.
Yeah, admittedly, that is one of the areas of the keynote where I pay attention because obviously it's important, but if it drones on too long, I tend to phase out, so I'm glad this one was mercifully hit the important points, and just then they moved on. So
yeah,
you know, we got the information in a mercifully brief format.
Yes, we did. I think people were a little surprised that the Apple TV was talked about next, and of course some people were really hoping if it was mentioned that it would mean a new piece of hardware, but that wasn't announced. But what did happen was they dropped the price to $69, and I think people should remember that the Apple TV is fully accessible with VoiceOver, and if you ever thought about getting an Apple TV, now might be a good time. There's going to be a partnership now with HBO where you can pay $15 a month and get standalone HBO content, both current, past, and anything that comes along in the future, I guess. Do you have any feelings about that? Do you care about that one way or the other?
Wait, I think it's a really good idea. I think it's a good service for people who are cord cutters. I have cable through Xfinity, so I'm not going to use it. But I think that, you know, considering that you're going to be getting a premium channel, $15 a month doesn't seem like that bad of a deal to me. Now, as always, whether you're accessing it through cable or through the HBO Now new service, I you know, my thing is any of the content going to be audio described? But even still, I think it's a good, relatively inexpensive means of accessing the content.
Yeah, lots of people for quite a while have been saying they would like to see things be made available a la carte. If you don't want to subscribe to cable, you can just subscribe to the services that you care about, like HBO being one of them. And I think this is perhaps a move in that direction. I suspect we're going to see more of this kind of thing. I don't know in the long run that it's ultimately going to be a whole lot cheaper if you want to subscribe to a ton of these different channels. But if you only want to subscribe to the ones you care about, I suppose in the long run, most of us won't subscribe to dozens of them or hundreds of them like are available on the cable, and we don't watch most of them. So it'll probably be a better deal for people, but at least people, I think, are going to start having some choice. And it seems like Apple and HBO are breaking ground in this area. So that's kind of exciting to me in a way, at least to see what happens in the future, I think.
I agree. You know, that we have right now, because we wanted the fastest internet we could get, we had to bundle with the TV package that had all of the channels. And there are so just a handful that we actually watch. So I personally would love to see some sort of a la carte service that would allow me to just get the channels that I want. And I would love ultimately to be able to switch over to some sort of, you know, broadband internet solution that isn't dependent on one of the big companies. That's where this is, you know, as Google Fiber increases its coverage. I think this is where we're heading. We're heading, getting away from these big conglomerations that are just kind of in it to take our money and not to give us the best experience. I'm not surprised at all to see that Apple is kind of spearheading that in terms of the television.
Yeah, it's different, but kind of similar to what they did in some ways with the music industry. I think they're starting mm-hmm. to do the same thing to a smaller degree. And of course, the cable companies are going to fight it tooth and nail. But it's interesting that HBO has chosen to step up and give this a try. And I bet it'll work out well. So anyway, that was kind of cool. And I think it sort of set a tone in some ways for this entire event. I think we saw some things introduced here that are interesting and exciting now, but many of them are going to yield even greater fruit in the future, with this HBO partnership being one of them. I guess it was a little surprising then that they then moved to talk a little bit about the iPhone, but mostly in the context of a new initiative that they've started, which I think is going to be huge in the future. And this is this whole idea of research kit, where people can participate in research studies using your iPhone. And it really meets a huge need that we have to get decent sample sizes in research, which just is not happening the way that we currently do research. And I've been doing research and have been trained in research, and it's just a huge problem, as someone pointed out on during the video about the research initiative, that you can send out thousands of surveys and maybe only get 200 or 300 of them back, which is a huge problem. And it's also a problem that the data is just collected at a certain point in time. There's no ongoing collection of data. And the iPhone provides really the perfect vehicle for data to constantly be collected. And they showed off some new apps they have for working with such diseases as Parkinson's disease and diabetes and cardiovascular disease and asthma. You know, it just really seems like this is the beginning of a new era for medical research. And I don't know that a lot of people realize yet just what this is going to mean down the road, but it sure excited me on Monday to see this research initiative be announced, because I don't think anyone knew anything about it.
No, this was a pretty well-kept secret. I mean, we had heard through the various rumor mills that doctors were being hired, and there were all kinds of speculations surrounding, you know, what these physicians were doing in terms of helping Apple. But I don't think anybody could have expected this. This is going to change lives. This is going to save lives. In fact, just within a few days of the few research kit ready apps, which are now available, being published on the App Store, one of the studies, the Parkinson's disease study, I believe, already has over 7,000 participants. Another study through Stanford has over 10,000 participants, and we're not even a week in. So that's crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah, the numbers are going to be huge, and Apple did make the point that the data is not going to be viewable by Apple. And so I think they've proven in many ways with Apple Pay and Touch ID that Apple is very concerned about the security of the data. And I don't think people have a lot to worry about when it comes to Apple and their medical data, because, you know, to be honest, medical data is just about as important to most people as banking information and that kind of thing. And right. So it has to be protected, and people are understandably concerned about it. I'm concerned about it, but I'm confident that Apple's doing the right thing. And I'm also excited in many ways that I think this research initiative is not about them making revenue, but it's really much more about giving something back. They have the tools to make something happen that hasn't been possible before, and they're choosing to do that. And I think that lines up quite nicely alongside, honestly, what they do with accessibility. So it's nice to see all this come together in the way that it is right now.
It's just, it's incredible. I can't even begin to imagine how this is going to take shape over the next, you know, 5-10 years. The world will truly be a different place in 10 years because of research. Can I really believe that?
Yeah, we just might see some cures to some of the diseases that have really been plaguing our world for a long time. So that's going to be really exciting to watch over the next few years. And that came as a big surprise on Monday. Then I guess we moved into another big surprise that was kept, for the most part, a secret. At least no one thought it would be announced during this particular event, but the new MacBook. It seems to me like it's a really engineering marvel, very innovative in several ways. And we can kind of go through maybe and talk about some of those ways, but What were your thoughts about the introduction of this new MacBook?
Well, my immediate reaction was, oh my God, I need to sell this old 15-inch Pro and get one. So yeah. That's something I'm considering doing. I had hoped that they would be announcing some new MacBooks. The rumors regarding, you know, the one port had been kind of floating around for a while. I was really, really pleasantly surprised, you know, to hear how light and thin it is. I'm on the road a lot now, a lot more, and I have wanted a MacBook that was going to give me a decent balance of power for things like audio editing and productivity while I'm on the go, a balance of power and portability. And I think that this might just do it. There's a lot of, you know, speculation about whether the quite good enough, but I think for, you know, the most power I want to do is audio editing, and I think I can probably manage it on this new MacBook. So I'm excited. I really liked a lot of the new innovative features that they talked about. The keyboard with the butterfly mechanism and the keys, which allows for more accurate typing. I'll be interested to see how those keys feel. From what I heard in the sort of echo chamber afterwards, it seemed like the keys were a little bit like cupped almost on the side. So it seems like they might even be a little bit easier to feel rather than at first I had heard they were like sort of, it was more flat design. And first of all, I was like, oh no, what are we going to do? How are we going to be able to feel these keys, especially when all the MacBooks start to you know, revert over to this design? But I actually have heard, as people have gotten their hands on them in the demo area, that it actually makes it easier to feel the keys because they're a little bit more, it seems like, indented. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and the actual caps of the keys are bigger than on the current Mac keyboards, even though the keys are closer together. I don't think it'll be a problem to feel them. I think the getting used to part will come in the fact that these keys have much less of a travel downward when you press them. And it's a little bit, I understand, like typing on a virtual keyboard, in the sense is that they just don't go down as far. And some people said, oh, I don't know about that. But most people said after a few minutes of typing on it, at least the few who have tried it in the demo area, said they really quickly got used to it. So I do think it's an interesting development, and they had to do it this way, honestly, because this new MacBook is so thin. There's no room for the keys to travel down very far. I do think people are going to have to go to the Apple Store, or at least I would want to, and try out this keyboard before I knew how I felt about it. But it sounds like it's going to be something that we'll all be getting used to if we own one of the new MacBooks, or now, before long, one of the new MacBook Pros even, I think we're going to very likely see them start to have this keyboard as well.
Yeah, another thing that really interested me was they took the clickiness away from the trackpad, and they've replaced it with a force touch trackpad, which allows also for what their taptic feedback that they alluded to in the Apple Watch. And I really want to check that out, because that just seems like it could have really broad implications for accessibility and different ways of interacting with the trackpad, in terms of, you know, right now we do a double tap and hold, and there may be some new gestures that come out of this force touch ability. I'm excited about that as well.
Well, this whole force touch idea and the taptic idea is really interesting, because what it actually is a virtual reality trick, mm-hmm. in a sense, because the new trackpad doesn't actually move at all the way the old trackpads did. But when you press on the trackpad, it feels to you as if it moved, even though physically, mm-hmm. it doesn't move at all. And you can set the amount of sensitivity that the trackpad has when you press on it, so that you can set it up in a way that suits your own style of touching the trackpad. And I agree with you, there are going to be some new gestures and some new ways of using the trackpad. But one thing that I think is really interesting for those of us who are blind, when the computer is not powered on and you touch the trackpad, you press on it, you feel nothing, because that capability is not enabled when the computer is not powered on. So it's going to be a really great way to make sure when you want it to be that your MacBook is powered off. And that's really helpful for someone who has to rely on some way of knowing that for sure without being able to see the lights on the system. And it's going to be especially helpful because the new machine does not have any sort of fan, and so it's right. not going to make any noise whatsoever, unless of course VoiceOver is speaking. But I'm talking about just to make sure that it really got powered down. That's going to be a good way to tell. So it's kind of a nice side effect, I think.
I hadn't even thought of that.
The other thing that's interesting is that this trackpad is very large, and Serenity Caldwell was saying that it's almost the size of the iPhone 6. So this almost certainly is going to mean that Apple is going to very likely be bringing this technology to the iPhone screen, which means we're going to be able to feel these virtual buttons and things like that on the screen, which I think is going to make a huge difference for accessibility.
That is too cool.
They made the motherboard for this machine much, much smaller. They made it much more power efficient, but at the same time, they added a Retina screen, 12-inch Retina screen to it. So they're driving more pixels with less power and a much smaller motherboard. And what they've done then instead is add more battery to the system by rearranging how the batteries are placed inside the case. And so it looks like it's going to have quite excellent, maybe 10 hours of battery life, which, you know, is going to be plenty to get through a day, And so I think what they're doing in some ways with this machine is they're moving us in the direction of making the MacBook in some respects be a bit more like the iPad. Not that it has a touchscreen, because it doesn't, but right, like the iPad in the sense that it's going to have really good battery life. It's really, really thin, so it's going to be easy to carry around. And it only has one port, and this is a USB 3C port. And so what's going to happen is you're going to have one port for everything. And I don't know how you feel about that. It's people are, you know, grousing about it and saying, well, how will I charge it and plug in something to use with USB at the same time and all that. And of course, one way you can do it is they're going to sell you many, many adapters that will let you do that kind of thing. And they're going to charge quite a bit for those adapters. But I think really more importantly, the idea at least that they're trying to move us toward is you're not going to need to plug this thing into power except perhaps at night when you want to let it charge up, much like we do our phones and our iPads. It's and people are upset because they got rid of the MagSafe connector. And the MagSafe connector was a wonderful invention if you were going to have your laptop plugged in a lot and someone might walk by and trip over the cord, and rather than pull your computer off the table, the MagSafe adapter would just pop out, and so your computer would be safe. But I think their idea is you don't need a MagSafe connector so much, because the only time you're going to plug it in is probably when you're not using it and let it charge, and you can put it safely out of the way at that point. So I don't know. What do you think about all that?
I don't really find myself plugging a whole lot of peripherals into this Mac that has, what, 3 USB ports? And I basically really just use one, so that adapter will serve me quite well for when I want to plug in my audio interface to do some podcasting. If I need to charge it while I'm doing that, the adapter will also have the USB-C input as well, so I can have it charging, I can do my recording. I want my Mac to be as portable as possible. So this doesn't bother me. I know that for folks who maybe are using it visually and who want to have a multiple screens plugged up and who need a lot of peripherals for whatever reason, they are having a little bit of a harder time accepting this, and maybe we're asking for 2 USB-C ports or what have you. But for me, as a totally blind person who doesn't need external displays, as somebody who is relying more and more heavily on cloud storage or the internal storage capacity of my device rather than thumb drives, as somebody who really only mainly uses USB when I'm podcasting, I think it would be a great solution. And actually, I think the smaller footprint of the Mac will help in terms of keeping my podcasting gear all straightened out on my desk as well, because right now this 15-inch Pro is taking up a lot of room here.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think really what this computer is, as much as anything, is it's showing us the future. This is the direction that Apple is going to be moving in with all of its laptop line. There's just almost no doubt about that. For me personally, I'm more of a MacBook Pro person. I use the SD card slot a lot to transfer data from my Mac to my HIMS devices, and I do use the various ports a fair amount for various reasons, and I like a little more processing power for editing audio and doing some of the things that I do. But I think we're going to, within the next year or two, probably within the next year, see a lot of these things come to the MacBook Pro. We're already seeing the new trackpad on the new updated MacBook Pro that was announced the other day, and I bet we're going to see the keyboard, and who knows how the ports are going to change, but I'm sure that they are going to. But I think this is a nice machine. It's most people feel like it's running roughly at the processing power of the 2012 MacBook Air, and that's a little bit frustrating to me in the sense that, you know, I think this is just how it works at Apple. When they introduced the first MacBook Air, I guess in 2008 or 2009, whenever it was a very underpowered, very thin machine, but it was the best they could do at the time. And then within a couple of years, the MacBook Air line had really advanced from that early machine to the powerful MacBook Airs that we have today. So this is how they do it. They get something out there and then they start iterating it into ultimately what it's going to be as time goes on. But for you, and perhaps for a lot of people, this machine's very thinness and lightness at 2 pounds might just be ideal for something that you want to carry around a lot. And I actually carry my MacBook back and forth to work every day. I have the 13-inch 2013 MacBook Pro Retina, which is actually itself very thin. It weighs about a pound more, I guess, than this new machine weighs. So it doesn't make a huge difference. But I think this is going to be a really popular machine, and it's going to be very interesting to see how people like it. And I think it's going to be available in April. Is that right?
Yeah, April the 10th. Going back to what you said briefly about the processor being basically equivalent to the 2012 MacBook Air, I guess I take some issue with that because we really haven't seen bench tests. At least I haven't, and maybe I just haven't been reading the right articles. And so much of people's perceptions of power in computers depends on what they do. I mean, for example, Jim Dalrymple of The Loop and various podcasts such as Amplified, he uses a MacBook Air from a couple of years ago, I want to say, with the bare basic configuration. I think only the 4 gigs of RAM and maybe a slightly better processor, but I actually don't know. And he does multi-track recording with Pro Tools on it and doesn't see any lag. So I think that for a lot of these power-related issues, perception can sometimes be reality. And, you know, I don't know. I want to give it a try. I'm certainly going to check it out in the store. When I go to try on the Apple Watch, I'm going to check out one of these MacBooks in the store before I make a final decision. But I don't think that people should be writing off the potential power that this thing can have, because it can do turbo boost up to 2.9 gigahertz. And that's plenty powerful for a lot of people.
I absolutely agree. And you're right, the machine's not even out yet. And so the benchmarks really haven't been done. They will be, and we'll know more as time goes on. But I completely agree that most of us think, myself included, think that we need more computing power than we ever get around to using. You know, I think that 8 gigs of RAM are fine, although
it's plenty.
A lot of us have put more RAM than that in some of our current machines. It isn't a cheap machine. It's not too much less expensive than the MacBook Pros. I think one thing that's going to be maybe a bit difficult for people is trying to choose which machine you really want, because to be honest, they're all quite thin, they're all quite light, and a lot of it boils down to what you think you need to do with the machine. I suspect eventually we're going to see the MacBook Air as we know it now disappear, and this MacBook, as it gains different capabilities, will likely replace the MacBook Air. Because one thing Apple doesn't like to do is complicate its product line by having too many products that are really similar to one another. So
yes.
right now it feels a little bit complicated. But I think that's going to shake out in the relatively near future. And I think they want to get this machine in the line without immediately just pulling the MacBook Air. And I think it honestly was probably a pretty smart move, because that way people who need different things can have them, and nobody loses at this point.
Right. I agree.
Well, the other thing I guess that was mainly focused on at the event was the thing that most people thought would take up most of, if not the whole event, but it only took up a small part of it really, is the Apple Watch. And did you discover anything much new, or what do you think about the coverage of the Apple Watch that was done on Monday?
You know, not a whole lot stood out in terms of new information beyond the pricing, of course, and the detailing of how these different types of metals were made. I thought that was very interesting, having the video talking about the strengthening of the aluminum in the sport, the strengthening of the stainless steel in the Apple Watch version itself. I was not surprised at all by the price of the edition. It's not $10,000 worth of gold, but let's face it, Apple wants to make a profit. And anybody who is going to be buying a solid gold watch, for them, $10,000 is not a whole lot of money to spend on a watch. It would be a hell of a lot for me. I'm certainly not going to get the gold one. But I think I will probably be going for the stainless steel, probably with either the leather loop or the Milanese loop. The only thing that might concern me about the Milanese loop is that I don't want it to get caught in my puppy dog's fur. And it is woven together sort of metal links. So I do have a slight concern about that. So I'll probably go with a leather loop band.
Yeah, I think you're right that for me, there wasn't a whole lot new. And I think people expected maybe there to be more new stuff announced. It was kind of intriguing to learn that the gold edition watch, I think, is only going to be sold in limited quantities and going to be sold in upscale stores. Sounds like probably not Apple stores, or maybe only certain Apple stores, but more than likely in upscaled high fashion jewelry stores. And I think it's great that Apple is offering that for the people who fit into that market. I mean, some people have criticized Apple for, you know, now saying they're moving toward only serving the elite or the wealthy or whatever, and that Steve Jobs didn't stand for that. And I think nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, the sport model or the stainless steel model is the same watch. It's just different casing. And right. So nobody's being cut out, or it's not being made available to only just one group of people with a certain level of income. But there's, in my mind, nothing wrong with making a gold watch available for people who that's the kind of thing they want.
Absolutely. And what I feel that the gold watch is going to do is going to even make Apple products seem even more intriguing, more trendy. If somebody sees their favorite movie star or singer sporting a gold Apple Watch, this might be somebody who is not really into Apple products, but they might be intrigued enough to check out the sport or the stainless steel version. So I think it's going to attract more everyday people, if you will, like us, to explore some of these products as well, who otherwise perhaps might not have. So I think that anything that they can do to get more of these products on the wrists of individuals is a good thing. And I agree. I think that if somebody has $10,000 to spend on a really beautiful gold watch, then more power to them. I think this is going to even make Apple products more inclusive.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me, the unknowns at this point really are, how well will this device actually perform with VoiceOver? We're confident that it has VoiceOver built into it, but I just have not seen any demos of how responsive VoiceOver will be when you turn the crown or when you swipe on the screen. And that's really kind of an unknown at this point. And I don't know whether you know any more at all about this than I do, but it seems like that we just don't know yet. Will it be smooth, and will it work well, or will it feel like a first generation product that needs some work done to bring VoiceOver along? And what will it be like? You know, this is a very visual item, except for the taptic feedback, which I think is going to be great for blind people. I think it's going to be terrific if you can, you know, just get a tap on your wrist when when your significant other is sending you a message or something, or when someone's waiting to pick you up, if they have an Apple Watch and they can just tap you on the wrist, you know, and you know that they're there, that'll be great. Mm-hmm. And I think that'll work well. But I don't know yet what we can really expect from VoiceOver. And that's going to be very interesting to me to find out, I think.
Yeah, I am not concerned. I have every confidence that Apple learns from their experiences. Every time they design a first generation product, they take the mistakes they made in the past and they learn from them, and they put that knowledge to good use in designing new products. I know that there had been some concerns because accessibility wasn't mentioned in the keynote, but like you said, we have had confirmation on a couple of different levels. In the rumor mill prior to the Apple Watch being unveiled, and closer than to the actual unveiling, Tim Cook himself did state that accessibility features like VoiceOver and Zoom would be included. I think that they're going to make it the very best experience that it can be. Bottom line, I think that the smoothness and responsiveness is pretty much going to be uniform, whether you're blind or sighted. It is a first generation product, so we'll all just kind of have to. Those of us who are intrepid enough to be early adopters, be we blind or sighted, are going to have to just jump in the pool and see.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to jump in the pool, and because I think it's a fascinating thing, this whole idea of a wearable like this that's integrated with the iPhone. And one thing that I've really learned from Apple over the years is Apple doesn't mind pushing me out of my comfort zone. Apple doesn't mind telling me, look, I don't care if you're blind, you can use a touch screen. We're going to show you how. We're going to make it possible for you to use this Apple Watch, and we're going to show you how by letting you get one and experiment with it and see what you can do with it. You know, I think it's really great. That's been one of my favorite things about the modern Apple, is how they constantly push the envelope. They remove ports that we all think we desperately need. They add speech to a touch screen that we don't think is possible, and they continue to innovate in this way. And I think that the watch is another great example of that. And you know, your point's a great one about the beginnings of the iPhone accessibility with 3GS. I did have one and it worked just fine. I can't remember, honestly, you know, exactly how slow it was, and I bet if I went back to it, and I should actually, because we still have a 3GS around here, I should fire it up and see what it's like, if it would even come up. I bet it would. But nonetheless, you know, it was fabulous at the time. It was very workable at the time, and it certainly wasn't as fast and as smooth as what we have with the 6 Plus today, because the hardware has changed so much and there are so many more capabilities now. But you're exactly right. It's going to be great to get this watch, experiment with it, see what we can do. I think the feedback, the tactile feedback, is going to be really great. We're going to have the same problem that we have with the iPhone. You know, it's different if you have to hear the information versus being able to glance at it visually on the screen. And so it's going to be interesting to see how we adopt that. I'm hoping that we'll pretty quickly see some really good Bluetooth earpieces that will work well with the watch, because I don't want my watch to be talking to me when I'm in a meeting, and maybe that's where the taptic feedback will come in, at least letting me know there's something there that I need to check on as soon as I can, something like that. But we're going to have to come up with some ways of using this thing unobtrusively, and that's going to be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah, there are supposedly going to be two different ways in which you can activate the watch as a VoiceOver user. You can raise your wrist, or you can double tap the screen. So I'll be interested to see which, you know, how high do you have to raise your wrist? Would walking with my dog somehow make the watch think that I was raising my wrist? These are all questions that I have. I would suspect that you would have to raise it a lot higher to to register, to have VoiceOver register that you want to actually use it. At least I would hope so. But these are just some of the unknowns that I'm willing, you know, as somebody who admittedly likes to live a little bit on the bleeding edge, you know, these are just some of the unknowns that I'm wanting to explore, and I just can't wait.
Oh, it's so exciting. You know, for both of us, I think just to be able to have these unknowns and be able to experiment and figure out what does work and what doesn't work, that's at least probably 2/3 of the fun of it for me, is just being able to do that.
Yeah.
I know some people hate that idea. You know, it's the skeptics will say, oh, you're just being one of Apple's, you're paying to be one of Apple's beta testers, but I don't see it that way at all. I mean, I think this is groundbreaking. It's never been done before. I have to say, Allison, though, it is so funny to me that here we are 6 months ago or a little more, a year ago, we were talking about, oh, I want one of these really big phones so that I'll have all this screen real estate and I'll be able to do these things on my big phone. Now we're talking about, I want one of these really small watches so I'll have to take my big phone out of my pocket as often so I can use my watch. And to me, that's just hilarious. You know, it's we just keep growing and changing and switching back and forth, and I just love it. I really just love every minute of it. Well, I think that we have pretty well covered the highlights of Monday's events.
I think we covered all the major points. And of course, you can go to the Apple events page and you can watch the entire keynote for yourself. It's quite an experience to experience the pageantry and just the excitement. You could tell. And what I really love about Tim Cook, I mean, and I adored Steve Jobs, but what I really love about Tim Cook is that his voice trembles with excitement when he talks about these products. He's like a kid on Christmas, and it warms my heart to know that Apple is in the hands of somebody who loves the company and loves these products as much as he does.
Yeah, and it's my belief and my gut tells me that is very genuine coming from him. I don't think that's an act.
Or yeah.
I don't think
it's
him.
You can't act that. You know?
No, I don't think it's really him trying to sell you something. I think it's just genuinely his own passion for what they're doing, and I think he's doing a great job with Apple. People were questioning him a while back, but I think he's proven over the last year that he's definitely the right person for the job right now. My preferred way to watch these events is just to sit down in a private place and have everything else shut out of my world for a while and just really dig in and listen to everything that happens at these events. It's wonderful, honestly.
I actually watched it twice because I just wanted to sort of just soak up every moment.
Yeah. Yeah, good for you. It's not unusual for me to watch them twice as well. And like I said, I did record the audio and went back and listened to parts of the audio again. And thanks, Rogue Amoeba, for that capability. So that's really very cool. All right. Well, if you guys want to communicate with us about your thoughts about Monday's Spring Forward event, Allison, how might they go about doing that?
Well, y'all can send an email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. That's techdoctor@dr-carter.com. We always love to hear your thoughts and opinions, so please get in touch with us.
All right. Well, we'll be back before long with something else brand new. But until then, this is Robert the Tech Doctor saying so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.